You go around breaking the law? That would be stupid. Cost you more money to break the law than to keep it. Nevertheless, there are such things as purely penal laws. Persons would not sin in breaking such laws, although they may still be penalized. How we bound in conscience, morally, to report all our earnings when our family is in need? No. We also have to be prudent. I've given too many retreats to too many men, including those working for the Internal Revenue. And realizing where billions of our American dollars are being spent, we should reassess the obligation of some, dare I say many, of our American civil laws. So much for law. Just to refresh our memories, law is that which one will, the will of a legislator, imposes on the wills, plural, of the members of a society. What is his right, the lawgiver's right, to make laws? His right to make laws is in order to preserve and foster the well-being of the society. Thus, in my own Society of Jesus, we have our constitutions. We have what we call rules. And they are quite numerous and quite demanding. When we become members of a religious order, we bind ourselves to the obedience of certain rules, call them laws, that unless we had become religious, we would not be bound by. For example, St. Ignatius tells us we are to cease whatever we're doing at the moment that the bell rings. And one of my prayers, may I ask you to join me in praying that bells will return to Jesuit communities. St. Teresa of Avila said, only two things are necessary to have a religious community: a superior and a bell. Our bells would ring at 5 o'clock. That meant get up. I think I told you about Cincinnati. Teaching in high school. To make sure we get up, first of all, the electric bell would ring and ring and keep ringing. Not everybody got up. Then Brother Mike, his name, he'd go around the corridors, all three floors, ring a very loud bell. That didn't get you up. Then he'd come to each room, open the door, and shout. He was no Latin scholar, but he shouted, "Benedicamus Domino, let us bless the Lord." And if you're awake, you're supposed to say, "Deo gratias." If you didn't say Deo gratias, then Brother Mike would come to your bed, shake the bed. If you still didn't get up, he would pull you out of bed. That was the law. The essence of law, therefore, is that God in His mysterious providence shares His authority with those who are in charge of a society, whether civil or ecclesiastical, whether domestic, in a family, or universal, as in the church. Do parents have the right to be obeyed? Do the children have a duty to obey their parents? Can the parents spell out their will in very specific forms? Remember one of my confreres at Western Michigan from Germany. One day I had dinner with him and his family. He had a bulletin board outside the kitchen. He had all the rules spelled out for the children. Among the rules was, nobody walks into this house with his shoes on. Helps to keep the house clean, don't you think? Now, some parents are more specific, like my German friend, spell out, and he would change those regulations. And that you were to read those regulations, and they better abide by them. The essence of law is, hear it, the essence of law is that human beings are vested with the divine authority to require obedience of those who are in that society. We go on now, having said what we did about law, remember what we're doing, we are covering a large area. This course covers many details of both divine and ecclesiastical law. But I thought for the lectures, it would concentrate on those areas which are broadest in their scope. And may I ask you to read, please, now that you have the full text. I believe it is 72 pages. Now we want to talk about sin. Remember, this is sin in general. And our focus, of course, is actual sin. What then is actual sin? It is the deliberate transgression of a law of God. Every word there counts, including, with emphasis, the indefinite article, a law of God. The sin, therefore, that a person commits by an act of his free will. Listen, we never use our free will, never, without either pleasing God or sinning, never. Everything we do with our free will is always either an act of virtue or an act of sin. We call it, that is sin, a deliberate transgression. When I want to commit what I know is forbidden by God, that's all. Or not doing what I know is commanded by God. There are things that God commands, and I do exactly what I want. All the conflicts, all the tensions, all the stress, all the wars of human history, everything is finally reduced to one conflict, the conflict between the divine and the human will. The only reason why people disagree either among or between themselves is because either one or both people disagree and disobey the law of God. When I sin, I don't merely do something wrong. In this, in today's psychologically mesmerized world, for many people, what they still may call sin, it is something which, was not smart, was foolish, because I did it. I lost my job, or lost a friend. The essence of sin is not that I hurt something, lose something, hurt myself, hurt someone else. No, the essence of sin is that my will, knowing what I'm doing, does what my mind tells me is the will of God. God then is always involved in every sin. Objectively, every sin is a personal offense against God. We do something that is displeasing to God. We don't call it hurting God because we cannot hurt the Almighty. But we can act contrary to the will of God. Whenever we do, we always sin. What are the requirements for actual sin? Over the years in teaching, for 25 years, my own Jesuit priest and scholastics, and by now, people that I've talked to publicly, what I've written, counseling, and of course, always in the sacrament of confession. Let's make sure we understand what we mean when we say that there are three basic conditions for every actual sin. Number one, that what I do is morally bad, or at least I consider it morally bad. And one reason, by the way, for learning more moral theology, as we're trying to do in these classes, is not only to know what I should not do, but to know what I should do. In other words, even though we necessarily become preoccupied with the sinful side of our human nature, our main purpose in living is not to avoid sin, but to do good. First then, an action must be morally bad, and somehow I must know that it is bad. Remember what he said, I think it was last time. We must have, however, an informed conscience. We cannot hide behind our ignorance. Take the grave sin of contraception that has destroyed millions of families. Who preaches on contraception today? Think I told you about the priest ordained 2 years in his blissful ignorance. One sunny thing he talked about the sin of contraception. Poor man. He was removed from the parish in 1 week. So we have a duty to know what God wants. And when we enter eternity, we will be judged by both what we've done wrong that we knew was wrong, and what we've done wrong that He were culpable in not knowing it was wrong. Secondly, the mind in some way adverts, is conscious that this is what I should not be doing. And most importantly, the will consents to the evil action, which then formally constitutes the sin. Let me be clear. All sin begins in the mind. My mind knows that something is either commanded by God or forbidden by God. But then, beginning of the mind, all sin immediately enters the will. My mind tells me something is wrong. Is my will free to do it or not? Yes. And the heart of freedom is the fact that our wills can choose either to do or not do what the mind tells us is morally wrong. In other words, we sin first and mainly in the mind, which then enters the will. And let's be clear how casually in our psychologically preoccupied society, for many people, I'm afraid, they almost identify sin with things which they do externally. I stole, or I got angry, or I committed some sin, say, of lust. But before sin becomes external in the body, there's already sin inside the soul. There's one thing over there that I've told my students, whatever else you know, know this. Our free will can command both our mind to think and hear it, and our will to choose. Our will can tell the mind, stop thinking. That thought that's on your mind. Because we have a fallen human nature, all our thoughts, needless to say, are not always good thoughts. We do have bad thoughts. Now, bad thoughts would not be a temptation unless they were pleasant. Every temptation is pleasant. If something is repulsive, it's not a temptation. How's that? That my mind is subject to the will. And that is why over the years, and with you how many times, I'll keep repeating as long as there's a breath in my lips. Write, that's spelled W-R-I-T-E, but I don't like to write. What's that got to do with it? Write. Writing is the best discipline for the mind. Many people, I don't want to say most people, but many people can talk without thinking. They just ooze words. But you cannot write without thinking. Write. I repeat, that's spelled W-R-I-T-E. And there's an exclamation mark after. Write. Carl Newman, who said, the main reason why most people do not do much writing is because it is so humiliating. They put something on paper. Now, of course, they immediately turn away. No problem. They reread what they wrote. They can't blame anybody else. Nobody else was around. But this. What simpleton wrote this? The ideas don't hang together. Incomplete sentences. A plural verb with a singular subject. And by the time you get to the end of the page, the writing is off on a tangent. So, write and read what you've written. I can tell you it is very good for your humility. My own average, from the time that I finish a manuscript to the time that it's published, the average is rereading 7 times. And each reading is more humiliating than the preceding. In other words, if we're going to control our thoughts, you've got to do some writing. So is the will. The will has mastery over itself. If I want to choose something, I will do so. I don't, I won't. One more question. What are the 2 kinds of actual sin? The 2 kinds of actual sin are mortal or and venial. And let me tell you, between those 2 words, mortal and venial, in today's church, there's a revolution. Because all that for centuries the church has taught is mortal sin. In so many now learned circles, even those allegedly and professedly Catholic, is no longer what we believe a mortal sin is, namely, 1, that deprives the soul of its friendship with God and the right to reach heaven if a person dies, as we used to say, and let's keep saying, in the state of mortal sin. And with that, I would like to now distribute, if I may, the quiz.